Welcome to the Hot Stove Society Show on Cairo Radio. Hey! We have a very lively audience today. My name is Tom Douglas.
And I'm Terry Rocharolder, chefing the hat.
I'm a local restaurateur who has several businesses. If you go to TomDouglas.com, you can find them all, including how to get tickets to our show, because look at all these happy faces. They're all getting some Lola breakfast this morning. We are here at the beautiful Hotel Andra in downtown Seattle, 4th and Virginia, up on the second floor. Come visit us sometimes. It's really fun.
It's one of the best places to go and learn how to cook. I can tell you that.
Check out our class schedules and all the fun stuff that we do here. And God, our corporate gigs. We've been doing so many. People are really heading back to the office a little bit, seems like to me, or at least reacquainting themselves with their coworkers. Annie's back in the kitchen. And we're going to bring to you a very large show. We've got lots of topics today, including peak of the season, rainbow chard. And Terry, I can't tell you how many times I've made chard here at a class where I've taken the leaves off, so everyone knows how to take the leaves off, right? And then I roast the stems, and right. People are like, what are you doing? So you're going to find out what to do, how to make more out of your money. It's Ramadan from April 2nd to May 1st when the Muslims fast from sunrise to sunset. We're going to talk. They don't fast for a month.
Yes, Tom.
They fast for a month? What are you allowed to eat? Well, I guess we're going to find that out. Save it for his own. Shashuka is all the rage. I was thinking it was like 3 days or something, but I'm just wrong. Shashuka is all the rage at Lola and beyond. It's on every menu, everywhere. What?
Shashuka.
Yeah, that too. Executive Chef Elizabeth Kenyon visits. She's running one of the hottest joints in town, which I've been to, and you just went to, right?
The Ruby Bar. This was funny because Pam sends me the show like he does every week. And I go, okay, what are we doing this week? I go, Rupi, I literally just went there.
I've been telling you for months to go there.
I know, it was really delicious, and the place looks sensational. That little patio, we'll talk about
it.
Keep it for the segment, Tom. God.
Have you noticed that there seems to be an endless amount of crunchy breading materials out in the world that people are willing to sacrifice their integrity to put on a Dorito or crushed Dorito on the
outside. I saw that for the first time the other day, a Dorito crumb to put around something. And I was like, now why would you want to do this to your food?
Yeah. So it's interesting, I think. And also, I'm just going to rail against it because it's just not my thing. And it goes, you know, it's like it started with cornflakes. And cornflakes are plain, kind of unsweetened. So it made a little bit more sense to me, but I don't know. I know. Don't even start getting online and yelling
yes,
at me.
Yes, do. We need
I know I'm in the minority, but somebody has to have some food integrity, and it's always me, right? Because...
Oh, my God.
Lastly, we're
going to go that way today.
Lastly, we're going to play Rub with Love Tasty Trivia. My goldfish are... And bacon fat. Right. My goldfish are delicious.
Lots of it.
getting back to a Rub with Love Tasty Trivia Challenge. We're going to wrap up the show.
To that.
Did we have a revolt last week when we didn't do the trivia challenge?
No, they love looking into your personalities deeply.
Did we get one email that said that?
No.
No, we didn't. Yeah, exactly. First, let's talk taste of the week. Terry, you went to the Rupee Bar.
That's right. And I have the menu right here, and I circled the four items and I ate.
There's only 12 items on the menu, and they're all about the size of my little finger. Why didn't you just order all of them?
Well, I said what I ate. There was three of us, so we went through the menu. Highlights, the naan and the dal is really, really, really well made. Yeah. I mean, it's authentic. I've been to India once in my life, and it really, really tasted delicious. Beautifully made yellow lentil and naan, and the naan is really... perfectly made. Naan is not something you can make in your own oven at home, you know, unless it's already pre-made. So it's a difficult, you know, if you don't have the oven to make it. But when you test it fresh, and I guess they have an oven back there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a tiny little kitchen. They're really big into restaurant. The cocktails, right? Did you have a cocktail?
Oh yeah, I had the Taj Mahal.
Oh, look at you! Oh yeah, I did.
Well, I'm making those eyes because I had the Taj Mahal, and I felt it was a little bit sweet. So the bartender came and he said, how did you like it? I'm like, I like it. Can you make a little less syrup in it? And he's like, sure, no problem. And he made it, and it was fantastic.
So he remade it for you?
No. He made another one. Oh, I drank the first one, even though it was sweet. I mean, you don't let that stuff go bad.
Oh. A pig like that.
A pig like this, you got to eat all at once.
Exactly.
No, it was really delicious. One thing that was stunning is the look of the restaurant is really cute. Very nicely thought of and very well decorated and designed. And the outside patio, that's probably the only patio I've seen in Seattle that has a fire in the middle of the patio. Mm-hmm. Like a really beautifully made wood-carved or wood-built kind of fire in the middle of the patio outside. Who's ever heard of that? I was like, you could put three tables here. The first thing I thought about was, get rid of the fire, put three tables. But no, I would recommend definitely if you have a little, feel for Indian food, just please go there and they do a great job. They put their own twist.
She's going to be on the show today, so.
Yeah, and hear more about it. But another pearl that I like of that dinner was the mutton rolls. They have a mutton rolls that's,
mm-hmm.
I thought that was really cool.
Yeah. My taste of the week, last night we were doing a benefit dinner for Make-A-Wish, something that I know you have done many of. I was relating a story to a young man who I met him when he was 10 years old. They literally brought him in an ambulance from Children's Hospital because his wish was to meet a chef and to work in a kitchen. So he was 10 or 12 years, 11 maybe years old, and came, and he was blown up like a balloon. All the drugs that he was on, and he was, I don't remember what his illness was, but I don't think there was a ton of expectation that he was going to see another birthday. And we did the whole thing. He spent the day with Sean in the kitchen at the palace, and I met him, and we chatted, blah, blah, blah. Nice to say, however many years later, his mother says, his mother walks up to me and says, do you remember me, blah, blah, blah? And I said, well, I remember, yeah. How's your son doing? You ask the question, it's like, how's your son doing? Because you don't think that he's there anymore. And, oh, he's a chef in Walla Walla and...
Whoa!
Yeah. So, isn't that cool?
Good news!
That's very cool.
I think this is about 20 years ago now, if I had to guess, maybe 18 or 20. So I think he's in his 30s and still cooking around the Northwest, I believe. So I'm not going to share his name because I don't remember it. But at the same time, last night, I was doing, as we do annually, the benefit for the people that bought our dinner... Serious Pie Pizza Making class at Serious Pie, the old Virginia space. Mm-hmm. We only had 8 people show up out of the, I think, 18 or 20 that we had given. And we all made pizza together, shared stories. And I know I'm getting around to my taste of the week. We were eating some of the mozzarella's just by itself that we use on our pizza now. And it's from Ferndale Creamery or Farmstead Creamery up in the Ferndale area up by Bellingham.
Yeah.
It's really good. And it's available in all of our stores. And sometimes we get so caught up in buying stuff from Italy or this or that that we forget to try something local, especially in something like a mozzarella.
Mm-hmm.
Or we just buy the commercial stuff out of Wisconsin.
Right.
The Ferndale, it's totally worth supporting. I think it's a delicious little mozzarella. And he makes a good smoky Scaramosa also.
I remember when he came on the show and he brought that. I was like, I love Scaramosa.
It just reminded me that this is right in our backyard and we should celebrate it and enjoy it.
Absolutely.
I know we have switched over to it completely at our pizza restaurants.
Right. So. Wow. Well, he went deep in it. They had an Italian cheesemaker with him for 2 years when they were building the creamery, so... That family's committed to doing it right and treating the cows really well.
And treating the cows really well. All right, when we come back, it's rainbow time. Whether that's ruby chard or rainbow chard, we're going to talk about it on Cairo Radio. It's the Hot Stove Society Show, 97.3 FM. All right, we're back in the kitchen at the Hot Stove Society, downtown Seattle. You know, if you want to, you can watch us on YouTube every Friday morning from 9 to 11 when we tape the show. Go to Tom Douglas, what is it, Pamela?
And Company.
Tom Douglas YouTube. And Company.
YouTube.com/ Tom Douglas and Company.
And what we really love for you to do, it doesn't cost a penny, is to become a subscriber.
Yes.
So that we can maintain our URL on the radio. And Terry, you're going to post it on your site too at some point.
Eventually,
right?
I'm going to. Yeah, once I find a technician that can help me do this stuff, I'll put it on my YouTube channel as well.
You know, our producer here, Sean, our electronic,
the very capable individual. Yes,
he can help you.
Definitely talk to him.
He can help you.
I keep forgetting we have in-house capabilities.
So once again, the other night I was making chard here for one of the classes. I teach quite a few of the classes around here, and Once again, I was taking the leaves off the chard and getting ready to saute them, but then I took the stems and I chopped the stems, and the whole room goes quiet because everyone's used to throwing the stems in the compost bin. And it's a little bit like my asparagus rant.
It's good for your compost.
Yeah. It's a little bit like my asparagus ramp, where people have been kind of taught to break it, and where it breaks is where it's tender. And it's such nonsense, right? Correct. Where it breaks is where it's there's no more stringy stuff on the outside of the stem. And so you end up throwing a third of your asparagus away that you just paid $5 a pound for. Because if you'd just taken a peeler and peeled off a little bit of that kind of stemmy stuff on the outside of the asparagus, it's perfectly delicious.
No, exactly.
Tastes like asparagus, oddly. Yeah. And it eats like asparagus. So same with chard. Those big stems, whether it's ruby chard or the rainbow chard, just take those stems, trim off the very bottom of the end, you know, the cut end, trim off a quarter inch, right?
Yeah.
The rest, just cut at an angle, and then I like to just throw them in the oven. I'll saute them in olive oil, salt, and pepper, and throw them in the oven. And then when those are done in, say, 10 minutes, now it only takes a minute or two to cook the top parts, the leaves, and saute those with, again, olive oil, salt, butter. My new favorite is our taco seasoning on them, because
you know, I used it this week.
It's really citrusy and has that little backup of some mild chilies. I just think it's a great little greens enhancer.
I recommend it on roasted broccoli, as a matter of fact. Oh, I did that this week.
Green,
it was delicious.
Generally, yeah.
Perfect. Super delicious.
Good.
But I'm the same. I'm exactly the same way, except I don't do use two different pan. I use the same pan. I start cooking the stem first in butter, slowly, covered, and so it braises very slowly. And then when they're starting to be a little bit tender, I throw in the leaves and toss the whole thing together. One thing that I always recommend to people is if you're going to use green of beets or greens of kale or whatever, any kind of leafy green, I usually recommend to take your knife first and then cut your leaves so they're not so cumbersome when you're cooking it, because it's a major pain in the patootie if you're cooking.
What's a patootie, chef? Is that a French term?
Yes. Oh. It's to be PC. Patootie. Yeah, you know. Anyway, so you put your leaves in your pan, and it's always cumbersome if you don't pre-cut them first, slice them. You know, just drive your chef's knife through.
I think there's two reasons to slice them. One is, if you're sauteing, you know, like when you pull the leaves off the stem, you end up with this long piece, like two long pieces,
correct,
right? And when you try to eat, after it's been sauteed, when you try to eat that, you end up at the table like slurping it up.
Well, that's
right?
The other problem.
And it's stringy and gross. Yeah. You want to kind of cut those so that when they cook, they're a fork-sized bite.
Correct.
Yeah.
You know, and that's true for everything you do in cooking. It's one thing that chefs learn that many home cooks don't know very well about is to size your food correctly so then it cooks better, it's easier to eat, it's not so cumbersome. Just like people who make sandwiches, one of my favorite quick story with Tom Douglas about, I don't know, 25 years ago at Dahlia Lounge. Do you remember this?
Mm-hmm.
Lunchtime, Tom says, hey, let's go have a little bite at Dahlia. So this is the old Dahlia. And we sit down, special of the day sandwich. I forgot what kind of sandwich. The sandwich come, I swear to God, it was at least 6-7 inches tall. And Tom looks at that and go, what the? So we stand up and we go to the kitchen. That was Sundstrom and Holly. Anyway, he goes, try to eat that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, you know, you go in those places sometime and they give you something to eat that's like, looks like a...
Well, like if you're at Katz's Deli in Manhattan, that's one thing, right? But if you're in a nice sit-down restaurant in a suit and tie...
You know, when I was at Katz last time, I took 2/3 of the meat off my sandwich so I could actually eat the sandwich.
But that's their shtick.
I get it.
Yeah.
But my point is, you know, this is the same thing at home. When you do something, try to think of the end product. So, yeah, your mouth is only so big. You know.
I had that happen to me at Lola the other day. I had to go back and tell them to make the meatballs in our little meatball soup smaller, because I had to try and cut a meatball in the middle of a hot bowl of soup. It's like, you can't do it.
Yeah.
So anyway, back to chard. My favorite thing these days, I love spinach. I love these kind of leafy greens, right? So Jackie, my wife, has been making a chard feta.
Spinach salad?
No, the pie with the, what's the pastry, the Greek pastry that I'm forgetting?
Oh, phyllo.
Phyllo pie. And I love the texture of the chard in there, right? because the chard is cooked and then it's drained.
Right.
And so it's almost velvety compared to spinach, which gets a little bit slimy.
Right, right.
The chard stays velvety, and the chunks of stem in there are a nice bite. And it's an entree. When you add feta cheese in there, the seasoning and stuff.
It's like a quiche.
A little bit like a quiche, yeah.
It's like a full meal. I mean, seriously, you have that, it's a full meal for sure.
That's a good way to use chard.
Right.
And it's an area where kale doesn't really work because kale stays a little bit too rough.
Right. It goes one way or the other. It either has roughness or it's completely, once it's completely cooked like they do it in the South, sometimes you find kale that's like completely cooked to death.
It's gross. You see a lot of that in the South with greens, collard greens, kales.
It's hardly recognizable as a collard, but I'm a big fan of beet greens and beets in general. We pulled the last one last week out of the garden and cooked the greens, the top and the stem. And then
Chef, we're talking about chard here.
I know, but I'm talking about chard and beets and all those vegetables are coming out of the ground now.
What can't you do with chard that you wouldn't do with beet greens? Either one can be sautéed.
I think the same thing. I mean, it's the same thing. You can do a nice chard gratin. Mm-hmm. Of course, you know, you always
tell me how you do that.
Time, but talking about using the stem, this is where I would use all the stem. Mm-hmm. And you actually want them to be actually a bit wider, you know, because it would take forever to use that many small stem. Mm-hmm. But if you have chard green that are, you know, with the stem about an inch wide, you just cut those stems and then you put them in a pan, cook them a little bit. I like to cook them a little bit ahead of time and then put them all in the pan with layers of beet stems, cheese, beet green, cheese.
Chard, you're talking chard, right?
Chard, sorry. I get confused between the beet green and the chard. But you get the point. You can do it with either or. But with the chard, it makes a wonderful gratin. Then if you want and get fancy on me, you put...
So are you taking your... Are you cooking the chard first in your gratin? Sautéing a little bit?
I'm sautéing the stem.
Adding cream? What are you adding to it?
Cheese. Cream.
What kind of cheese? Comté or something like that?
Yeah, like a comté or emmental, you know, something that has a little bite to it. And then seasoning, and then lay down the stems, and then cheese, leaves, cheese, stem. So you vary between steam and between leaves and stems. Wow, I can't speak this morning. Cheese layered, and then bechamel on top, a little layer of bechamel, and you bake the whole thing in the oven. Finish with cheese and then bake again under the broiler, and you have this wonderful little crusty gratin of beautiful greens.
Sounds delicious. You know, this is the year of Ramadan. Is from April 2nd to May 1st. Muslims fast from sunrise to sunset. We're going to talk to a young lady who's the owner of the Cafe Turco in Fremont about the foods that Muslims eat to break their fast. I know nothing about this topic. I have to read about it a little bit. When we come back on Cairo Radio, it's the Hot Stove Society Show, 97.3 FM.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back to the Hot Stove Society Show on Cairo Radio. This year, Ramadan is from April 2nd to May 1st, where Muslims fast from sunrise to sunset. And we're going to talk to Saria Gukeri, owner of Cafe Turco in Fremont, about the foods that Muslims like to eat when they break their fast. Good morning and good afternoon and whatever time it is in Fremont. Because, you know, Fremont is the center of the universe.
Of course.
Good morning, Soraya.
Good morning.
So you heard my question, I guess. Tell us a little bit about
heard your question.
About Ramadan, and then we can get into the foods.
First of all, I would like to tell you what Ramadan is. Ramadan is the name of the month, the ninth month in Islamic calendar. Islamic calendar is about lunar movement, lunar calendar. So it's normally, compared to the calendar we follow in the United States, it's 6 days shorter. So Ramadan is the ninth month where Muslims are prescribed to the test, but they do this for a month, sometimes 29 days, and it changes every year. So every 30, 35 years, it comes to the same time. Sometimes people say, oh, last summer you were fasting, now you are fasting in the fall? Yes, because the Ramadan time changes every year by 6 days. So Ramadan, basically fasting from sunrise to sunset. So since the time changes, sunrise time changes and sunset time changes every day, it becomes either 2-3 minutes later or 2 or 3 minutes earlier. But it's basically not eating, drinking, smoking, and putting in anything in your mouth during the whole month until sunset, which is close to 18, 20 hours a day. There are times we eat, which is after sunset until dawn time, and we are supposed to wake up before the sun rises and eat, light things, and then go to bed or stay up, go to work, whatever. And this whole thing makes Ramadan a very special time for Muslims. So there are 1.8 million billion Muslims in the world, and everybody looks forward to this month. This month does not just come by itself. There are two other months that come before Ramadan that make you prepare yourself for Ramadan, for fasting. So you know Ramadan is coming up 2 months before Ramadan. And then you start making plans about your life, about how you will be fasting, about how you will spend your money for charity and helping other people. So it's basically a preparation month. And tomorrow we will be fasting, and hopefully we will be applying everything we decided to do in our lives, within a month. And following Ramadan, we will have 3 days of holiday. And in these 3 days, we will have visitors, we will visit people. Hopefully we will live Ramadan fully at the end of the whole month. So if the Ramadan basically is about self-control over worldly desires and surrender to God, and many people just prepare themselves about how to self-control. It's not just about not eating. It's about controlling your eyes, your ear, your tongue, not to say bad words to each other, be tolerant, understanding, having some spiritual awareness, following some self-discipline, and how you can understand and empathize with those in poverty and hunger, improve your patience. It's all about purifying your body, heart, and soul, and just giving. Mm-hmm. This is the month of giving. This is the month of caring for each other and surrendering to God.
Well, that is a lot to do.
That's very spiritual, and that's very cool.
So have you found, Sharia, have you found things that kind of get you through the day that you have for breakfast? And then how do you like to break your fast?
How do I like to break my fast?
Well, how do you start the day?
This is a good question, because how do I start a day? Muslims are supposed to fast 5 times a day. And the first fast, supposed to pray 5 times a day. The first prayer is before sunrise. So normally I get up before sunrise, half an hour or 45 minutes before sun rises, and I prepare food for my children. I have 2 sons for my family, and we eat together. 10 minutes before the sun rises, we stop eating and drinking, and I go and pray. And as a family, we pray. And then if it's too early summertime, we go to bed. If not, we get ready and go to work. Or, you know, do our usual stuff in the morning. We don't have breakfast. But when it's time to break the fast, normally no Muslim family will break the fast alone. They will either go to neighbors or community or friends, somebody family, just whatever.
Is in there a traditional meal that you use to break the fast?
Yes. First of all, we have dates and milk and soup. Always, at every family's table, there is some kind of soup and dates. And after we eat the dates and have the soup, we are supposed to go and pray, which takes about 10 minutes the most, and then come back. That 10 minutes gives you extra time for your body to adjust the sugar level, increasing sugar level all of a sudden. And then you sit down and eat your favorite food. Since it's a 30-day event, and, you know, my kids have favorite meals. Everybody has favorite items that they put on the table, multiple things, and you just share your food. You send some to neighbors, you send some to friends, and they send some to your house. Or in America, we go to mosques. Before COVID, every single mosque would offer the iftar food, which is fast-breaking food for the people around. But it's not been done in the last 2 years. Hopefully, they are starting this year again. You know, if you are on the street someplace, you don't have anything to eat, or you want to meet with your neighborhood people, Muslim family, you go to your neighborhood mosque, and they will feed you over there.
So, Camille, before we run out of time, we only have about a minute and a half left. Let's talk about your restaurant, Cafe Turco, in Fremont, what people love there, what you love to make there.
I started my restaurant as a cafe. It was a beautiful place, Fremont, of course. And we have a rich menu of Turkish food and a beautiful atmosphere, beautiful decor. And since we started the business, 3 months took us really well. And we really love to serve the community as a place where they can gather and eat and be happy. And we want people to feel like they are in the Middle East other than they are someplace in Seattle.
Mm-hmm. So fun, Turco. I have not been there yet. One of our audience members just melted when she thought about your moussaka.
Because she loves us.
She loves
love. Love makes things positive. And it is good moussaka, but
Soraya, yes. I'm curious because I haven't been and I want to go. What other dishes can I expect to see on the menu?
We have Ali Nazik. Ali Nazik is my childhood dish. Every time I serve that dish, every time that plate is in my hand or I am preparing that dish, it takes me to my childhood when I was in elementary school. My mom made it, put in front of me. It's basically grilled chicken, lamb, or vegetables on grilled eggplant and yogurt and garlic dip, served warm with salad and Turkish wedding rice, which is yellow rice with carrots and dill.
Nice. Sounds nice and fresh. I love it.
So delicious. If you want to go out and see Soraya at her restaurant, Turco in Fremont, I would suggest you do it soon. It's going to be very popular. And when you're on our show, you get very popular. Thank you so much for your time, Soraya.
Really? Okay, well, thank you so much. Thank you for taking time and listening to me. And Ramadan is very special for us. We would love if you guys can come and observe Muslims breaking their fast, because starting tomorrow night, every night after 7:30, we will have tons of customers eating at the same time, which will be a really big challenge for us.
Yes, I'm sure it will be.
Well,
thank you, happy Ramadan.
Thank
you so much.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
All right. When we come back, it's shashuka time at Lola, and how we're seeing recipes for this all over the country. On Cairo, it's the Hot Stove Society Show, 97.3 FM. Welcome back to the Hot Stove Society Show in Cairo. We are going to chat for a few minutes about shakshuka, which is one of your favorite things.
Oh, I love that.
I love it. I haven't had it very often, honestly, so I don't have a breadth of experience with it to know which is a good one, which is a bad one. I just know when we were working on our recipe down here at Lola that I kept wanting more caramelization, and we were making it in these kind of almost cast iron pans. and we just weren't getting enough caramelization. So I said, turn the burner up. Just
yeah.
You always solve things that way.
Turn the burner
more
up.
Caramelization.
Yeah. Turn it up and be patient. And be Wait patient. Till the pan is hot.
Yeah, exactly. So Chef Thierry Shakshuka has taken over the world. I don't honestly know its origins, but it's, I'm sure it comes from the Middle East.
Yeah, Northern Africa, Middle mm-hmm. East, yeah, the whole area down there. And I think basic shakshuka is onion, tomato, peppers. And then, of course, when I was a child, my favorite thing was to add two eggs on top of that.
This is what we do downstairs, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I love that. Breaking that and cook the eggs, you know, bake the eggs slowly, not all the way. And then you crack that egg yolk and you mix the whole thing together with some nice little flatbread or whatever, or even some nice country bread.
Uh-huh.
Mm. A good shakshuka for breakfast is a beautiful breakfast.
So I relate it personally. At my home back in Newark, Delaware, I relate it a little bit to going to my neighbor's house, Mr. Joe, and he would make us tomato gravy. But his tomato gravy was literally a flour-based, maybe a bacon or pork fat gravy that instead of cream or stock, it was made with tomato sauce. And so you thicken the tomato sauce with green peppers, onions, the trilogy, basically.
Sure.
So it's very Creole in nature. And that's what I feel when I eat shakshuka is it feels very kind of New Orleans Creole-esque to me.
Yeah, I can see that. There's just no thickener in it, which is, I mean, originally there's no flour.
Well,
in
it's just a reduction of the tomato paste is the thickener, yeah.
Yeah, I think basically it's a showcase of, from the hot area of the world, it's a showcase of bell peppers and tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
That's the main flavor of that ingredient, of the dish. Now, some parts they had cumin and coriander, in some parts they had harissa, in some parts, you know, everybody has their own little variant to it
mm-hmm.
in terms of spicing, but the base of it is onion, tomato, and peppers. And then you can do whatever you want from that. I mean, you could literally put a piece of steak on it if you wanted to.
Right.
If you wanted to. But I think, to me, it's a quite essential breakfast or lunch item. You know, and you could actually take the whole dish from the cast iron pan and put it right on top of a tartine, a toasted piece of country Italian bread or something like that, and serve that for lunch with a little salad on the side.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd have a wonderful lunch. I mean, that wouldn't be extreme. You could put sausage on top. You could do so many things from the variants from that. I know you're looking at me like...
No, I'm not. I was just thinking my favorite thing. I don't put sausage. I don't put steak. I'm really, very much an egg person on it. But I will say that I'm not... I mean, I like poached eggs in a funny way, but on that, I want some brown. So I'll cook my eggs separate from it. And I know that's not traditional at all. But I put some bacon fat and butter in a pan and fry those eggs to a crispy brown edge around the eggs. On the whites, you know, still leave the yolks raw, and then just put it right on top of my...
Right.
My so also, it's the same thing that you talked about, but you're adding some color to the eggs.
So also, originally, I think it's a meatless item, mm-hmm. you know, of a dish. So there would obviously not be any bacon fat in there. But, I mean, it's the same concept. And then fresh herbs, you know, if you have basil in your backyard or if you have fresh chive, like right now my chives are...
Crazy.
You know, going nuts and gorgeous, gorgeous young tender chive. I mean, you take a whole bunch of that, chop it, and put it all over your eggs on top of your shakshuka. I've had that. I would love that for breakfast right now.
Right now.
Yeah, that would be a...
Well, you turned down. You know, we had a breakfast this morning here in the studio of either granola with... how was the granola? With good fruit, good yogurt. Or we had the famous Lola pancakes with the famous Lola maple pork sausage. And you turned down both of those.
Do I look like any pancake, sir? I mean, literally, I am a pancake.
So typically for us, how we make this is we have the cast iron, we get it nice and hot, we sear the peppers and onions, and then we add the crushed tomatoes.
Correct.
So to me, it's not just tomato sauce, it's... kind of like crushed tomatoes, so there's some pulp in there.
Correct.
Right? So, and then we just simply let that zip up. I mean, we add garlic to ours. I don't know if that's traditional or not.
I think that's an add-on.
We also
use
the harissa. But we use the rose harissa. And I love the rose harissa. It's made with rose hips because it adds just a beautiful fragrance to the dish. That straight up harissa, you get preserved lemon and cumin and garlic and peppers, or pepper paste. With the rose harissa, you really get an aromat to, right, to it. So,
and if you have none of the above, you just add what do you normally have? Your hot sauce in your refrigerator than you always have, and you add
the spicy chili crisp.
You put spicy chili crisp on top of those two eggs. You'll have a wonderful dish on your hands.
Now, there's a mix of cultures right there.
That's, exactly. Yeah. The point is that I think the base of it is understood, and then the rest is becoming a vessel to just, you know, just you can add on to what you want. Depends on your breakfast idea. I mean, you could literally take the vegetable before you put the eggs, put some breadcrumb, and then put it in the oven and bake it and have a nice little crispiness on top. Put your eggs right on top of that. Mm. That would be good, too.
The other place that this dish really works well is, in my mind, is at on a campfire.
Oh, yeah.
Like, if you're out camping or something, because I think the little wood smoke from the campfire that you pick up is something with this particular dish, right? The cast iron, the hot sear.
Perfect for camping, for sure.
The biggest thing there is you take your toast and you do that over the fire, too, because toast just sucks up the smoke from a campfire, from any sort of wood fire. So,
yeah.
And it, you don't even... I mean, the dish itself doesn't even need to be smoky because your toast is smoky. So,
Pam, have you ever had shakshuka?
Yes, and the reason I was attracted to talking about it today is because I've started to see many more green variations, and it's unusual for me to turn away from anything that's based in peppers because I'm a pepper enthusiast. But now I'm seeing... versions of shakshuka on leafy greens, more garlicky greens and leeks, still with the warm egg on top and the ability to sop up your crunchy bread. Mm-hmm. So I just love the popularity of the combination of the vegetables and warm egg, but demonstrating that there's a lot of possibilities with it.
Yeah, you don't need a big steak. I mean, it really is filling, and it's really a meal.
But it's a no-meat. It's a no-meat dish.
No meat, yeah.
Yeah, it's a no-meat dish. No. But you're right. You can do so many versions. I mean, especially in spring and summer, once you have all those vegetables, zucchini would be good. You know, when you have all those zucchini in your backyard, you had that, you know, sliced zucchini, quickly sauté, put them into your shakshuka after it's done, or, you know, just before you put the eggs on top, you'd have a wonderful dish. It would be almost like a ratatouille idea where you... start putting eggplant and zucchini added to your shakshuka. But originally, it's a quick wham-bam thing in the morning that people make for breakfast or for lunch. And it's not a very complicated thing for the house. So,
well, I've done a 180 on it. It's not something I would ever order. If you gave me a choice of a smoked salmon on rye toast, smoked salmon on rye toast or something in the morning, I would have that 100 times out of 100 over a shakshuka. And then when we put it on the menu here at Lola, I started falling in love with it. It's something that is now in
my would you have it for breakfast now?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a great breakfast item.
Start your day with vegetables. That's what I say.
I will say that I do start my day with smoked salmon 5 days out of seven. Just saying.
Wait, I love what happened to the sausage and the bacon? Oh, that's the other 2 days.
That was this morning. Yeah. You know, right now, do we have time for this? Right now, if you go to Wild Salmon Fish Market over at the Fisherman's Terminal, they happen to have a beautiful, huge king salmon that's smoked and in chunks, and it's delicious. I'll just say that. Okay, when we come back, it's time for hour number two. Stay with us for another hour. We got so many things, including Elizabeth Kenyon, from the Old Salt Bagels to Manolin to the Rupee Bar. On Cairo, it's the Hot Stove Society Show, 97.3 FM. Welcome back. It's the Hot Stove Society Show, hour number two.
I'm Terry Rotero, the chef in a hat.
I'm Tom Douglas. We're here in downtown Seattle at the beautiful Hotel Andra. Second floor, if you see Lola on the corner, just go inside that building and come up to the second floor. And we are often full of excited guests here learning how to cook or enjoying each other's company. In our next hour, of course, we're going to wrap it up with Food for Thought Tasty Trivia. That's always a fun time. Can't get too much of that, can you, Chef?
Never enough. I'm sorry we missed it last week.
We're going to talk for a few minutes about weird, crunchy breading things that are going on in our world that make me nuts. And I'm not talking about hazelnuts.
Are they using hazelnut?
But yeah, there's a lot going on, and I hope it's just like a fad. For the first two segments of our last hour, we're going to talk with Elizabeth Kenyon, who's got some of the hottest restaurants here in Seattle and has been going at this daily for quite a while now. I remember going to Manolin in the first, I don't know, year or so of your opening, and we couldn't even get in then. But now you've got a couple other things, the Ruby Bar and Old Salt Bagels, to add to your mix. So welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Absolutely.
Thanks.
Come right up to that microphone, Elizabeth.
Oh, no.
Chef, we're going to wait till the next segment to talk about Ruby, but
sure.
Tell us about what you brought us here this morning, these Old Salt Bagels, and why you got into bagels, and what makes yours the best in Seattle.
So we started Old Salt Fish and Bagels when we had to shut down Monoline for the pandemic.
Uh-huh.
We're trying to figure out what to do. We tried some lunch options, and just nothing was really clicking. You know, Monoline's a very sit-down, nice dinner. And so we're just brainstorming, and I remember I went down to the market one day and picked up some smoked fish, and I was like, you know, we smoke fish over our wood fire grill all the time. Like, why can't we do something with smoked fish? We have the best fish in the country, I think. You know, we use Northwest Bounty for all of our fish, who's a local guy. And he was also slower during the pandemic. He didn't have a lot going on. So I was like, well, what goes good with smoked fish?
Funny.
I was like, it needs a vessel, you uh-huh. know? And I'd never baked before, really, except for in culinary school. And I started testing out some bagels, and it was a nightmare. I was so bad at it. And just kept tweaking and talking to a lot of people, and getting, you know, I have a, you know, some close friends that are bakers, and just kind of started building this restaurant pretty much. And we were only going to do it through 2020 in the winter until we could reopen Monoline, and it really took off.
Mm-hmm.
And people love it, and we love it, and we were able to keep on all of our staff, which is ultimately the goal at the end of the day for me especially. And so it was really, really fun, and it's blown up into something that we didn't expect.
Isn't that awesome?
Yeah,
of course,
you have a
baker's heart right next to you there. Seawolf Bakery is right next to
you. Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah.
And those guys also, like, I turned to those guys a lot, and they were super helpful, and so it's been a process. It's been an experience. But you know, we have a fantastic staff with us, and we've kept people on for a long time, and it's also really fun.
Yeah.
You know, we smoke a ton of fish. We smoke so much fish. And you know, make bagels every day, fresh every day. You know, Thursday through Sunday right now, and then we'll expand it as we can.
Mm-hmm.
So you go home, your clothes are like all smoked out?
I'm all smoked out.
So tell us, what makes a great bagel? Like, there's a lot of bagels around our town, from Eltana, which is like a Montreal-style bagel. There's the new Rubenstein's or Stein's, mm-hmm. which is doing really good. It's a good, hard, chewy bagel. Mm-hmm. I mean, blazing. There's all sorts of bagels. What makes yours as good or better or different?
You know, and that's the thing. There's, like, for some reason, like, we came into the middle of this, like, bagel epidemic, you know.
Uh-huh.
It was insane, and there's so many bagels across the city, but they're all so different, and I love to see what everybody's doing. Everyone's different, and for us, like, what I wanted out of our bagel wasn't a traditional Montreal bagel, wasn't a traditional New York bagel, so ours are a little bit softer with more of a crust on the outside, and then we also do an egg wash on ours just to get that extra sheen. We use the barley malt to have more sheen on that, and then it's, you know, we add quite a bit of salt and sugar and stuff to our boil. And you know, we just kind of kept tweaking it. You know, our biggest thing was you know, the temperature on the boil. Like, it has to be, you know, the certain temperature to get the correct, you know,
right,
fluff that we want, you know. And, you know, we're using shepherd's grain flour. It's really good flour. And that's that, you know, I think, you know, we're using a deck oven right now. It's just like an old crappy, you know, deck oven that's like cracked and, you know, but like, it works great. It works fine.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we put cornmeal on the bottom, and that's that, you know, it's just really simple. And it's just little tweaks that we made along the way that became our bagel.
Right.
You know, and there's so many steps and so many touches in the process of making bagels that, you know, everyone does it differently.
It's more like, it's to me, it's like bread. Your bagel,
yep,
is more like a bread. I mean,
exactly.
Like, a New York bagel is very dense,
mm-hmm,
very it doesn't have the fluffiness than you have on your your. You remind me more of a bread.
Yeah, and so that's kind of what we wanted because, you know, we're making these sandwiches. We're making these smoked fish sandwiches, and I didn't want something that was going to be super dense and chewy to where you couldn't bite into the sandwich, you know?
Right.
And, like, our biggest thing with the bagels, like, don't get me wrong, the bagels are great. They're wonderful, but our main focus is our smoked fish. Mm-hmm. So that's, yeah, just something easy to eat with some fish and kind of take, like, the... Take the back.
It would do great on the grill, I think, on the barbecue. Like, if you were turning on your barbecue and have those bagels around, throw them on there and give it a nice little char on the, cut them
Absolutely.
In half. Put it on the grill and give it a nice char. That would definitely help with the smoked salmon. It would be like...
But it was the first bagel I ever had that I thought, I'm so glad I didn't get it toasted because the texture of it is so satisfying. Yeah. And perfect, and it was like...
Yeah, and that was our main thing, too. Like, our tastings was, you know, we'd toast them longer, we wouldn't toast them, and our consensus was, you know, I don't want a toasted bagel, and I'm not going to offer to toast a bagel, but we will. We have a little home toaster.
I love a toasted bagel.
Yeah, we have little home toasters. So they take a lot longer, but, you know, you can wait a little bit longer if you want a toasted bagel.
Well, you were standing over there when I was lauding that I ran into this beautiful... King salmon over at the Wild Salmon Fish Market, because in their particular case, it changes every week depending on what fish they get, and they happen to have this beautiful king smoke. But your smoked fish is delicious too. So
yeah, we love wild salmon,
but that's more kippered, right? And this is more lox like.
So we have lox. It's a traditional lox, and then we do have a kippered salmon, which we use. We actually use a chum or a keta, which is a like lower, it's not as popular as the salmon. So we're using up a lot of the bycatch in that area. And then we also have a smoked, a lightly smoked black cod. It's on a cold smoke. We put some cayenne on there and brine it with salt.
Yeah, all delicious. When we come back, let's jump into Rupee Bar and what's going on over there and how it's, in my mind, changed the way a lot of people dine. On Cairo Radio, it's the Hot Stove Society Show, 97.3 FM. And we're back on Cairo Radio. Tom Douglas.
Terry Rotturo, the chef in the hat.
We are joined by Elizabeth Kenyon of the Manolin fame over there in Walmont. I'm gonna make this right now. There's Free Lard.
Elizabeth's with me. It's Fremont.
There's Free Lard heading out to Ballard, and now I've just renamed the other side of Fremont Walmont, and with Fremont in the center.
You're
a problem.
Elizabeth Kenyon is here. She is one of the hottest restaurateurs in Seattle. And we're going to talk a little bit about the Rupee Bar, but Pamela would like to know how you got into the business and
you have partners
a little
too.
Bit of your history.
Okay. Yeah, totally. So I grew up in Missoula, Montana. You know, not a lot of food comes from Missoula, Montana. But I grew up in a cooking family. My grandmother cooked, you know, my mom's from Miami and learned a lot of cooking from my grandma and my mom. My mom ran a catering business and I just kind of got into that. Ended up going to culinary school at the New England Culinary Institute, graduated from there. I've worked in, Portland, Atlanta, Vermont, done a lot of stages in New York, Italy, some cooking in Sri Lanka and in India. I did some stages over there. That brought me to Seattle, and I've been here ever since. I started with Monoline, and I have not left because I love it so much.
Not stopped, even.
Yeah, I love my job. So, yeah, that's pretty much my history there, guys.
It's a great history.
Thanks.
Congratulations on your success.
Thank you.
Well, the concepts are just so pure and distinctive. That's what I love about your company. You know, each one truly expands on what its core is. Its menu and the way it looks. It's just, you nailed it.
I think a lot of people don't realize that we're all connected, you know. You know, the owners, you know, Joe, Pat, and Rachel, you know, they had these visions, and, you know, we just made them come to life, and they're all very different. They're all their own thing, and it's been really fun to be able to work on different projects and get inspiration from a lot of different areas. So
very cool.
So how would you classify Madeline?
I guess, you know, we focus on a lot of like coastal cuisine, I would say. So there's a lot of acid, very bright flavors, very fresh, very fish focused. You know, we cook a lot of things on our wood fire grill. You know, we're starting to do dinners there. We're starting to do spirits dinners. So this Sunday we're doing our first rum dinner with a 10-to-1 rum. And yeah, it's really good. And so like very, very like coastal, you know, there's a lot of Latin influence, a lot of Peruvian influence. And then, you know, it's pretty much anything that you think about when you're like, I'm on a beach and I want to eat some food, you know.
Sardine on a stick, mackerel on a stick.
Exactly, yeah. And like the cocktails, ceviches, the cocktails are fantastic. They're really fruity. They're really fun. The vibe's fun. The music's loud. It's a huge open kitchen. I mean, it's not huge. It's a small open kitchen, but it's very, very open. So it's really fun when you walk in there at like 7 or 8 at night and it's popping off and people are having a good time. Yep. And
you got a great outdoors there, too.
Yeah, great outdoors.
So then let's move on to Ruby Bar, which has been open for, what, 3 years now?
No.
Two?
2.5. We opened, I think it was 6 months before the pandemic. So we got a short run, and then the pandemic happened, and we had to switch everything around, and we started doing takeout food, and now it's back. Back to the original Ruby.
You were one of the busiest takeout places there was, it seemed like to me.
It was busy. And yeah, we weren't really totally set up for that. You know,
I don't think anybody was.
No, I know. And like we've never done takeout food before. Like if people come in,
I was actually against takeout food for most of my life until the pandemic came and I was like, I guess we have no choice.
Uh-huh. We had no
now
choice.
Now we're against the wall. You know, it's like it's either you close or you keep going with to go.
Exactly. And that's the thing. Like we, you know, we closed for, you know, to kind of, you know, reassess, and we reopen, and we just got to keep going.
So Rupee Bar is over on 24th and
63rd. Right next to Olaf's.
Yeah, everyone knows where Olaf's
is. Everyone knows Olaf's. Sometimes
actually
you don't
almost
leaving.
Across the street from Copine.
Yeah. Yep, kitty corner from Copine.
Block from Copine, yeah.
Yeah, they're fantastic. They're great neighbors. They're, we go
so
to dinner.
So what I said earlier when I was talking about you coming on was that I feel like Rupee Bar helped people be okay with small menus of delicious food, small quantities where you, and I know tapas bars and things like that have been doing that for a long time, but for some reason it felt different in there to me. And I was inspired by that, the ability to kind of sit there, drink cocktails, have a nice glass of wine, and have a really varied palette of food from an area that I'm not familiar with at all. So,
yeah. So I think that was our main, like one of the main focuses was to have a different dining experience. You know, traveling around Sri Lanka and South India, it was, you know, you sit down and things just start hitting the table. Mm-hmm. And like, I like to have people panic a little bit. You know, like, I mean, you just kind of start throwing out
food. Nice to have people scared when you're in charge.
I know, it's kind of fun. It's funny to watch. And then they settle into it. It's like, oh, I should eat everything like however I want to. It's not coursed out. We will do it coursed out if you really want it, but we wanted to have a really fun, fast dining experience. Not fast in the way of like we're hurrying you out of there, but like things hit and you just start eating all these different things together, and you make it's pretty much like choose your own adventure.
Yeah,
and that's like my favorite style of eating,
like dim sum, or you know, in a funny way. Yeah
absolutely. So and I think, you know, I'm designing the menu to be some of it's a little bit more subtle, and then a lot of it's just like a punch in the face. You know, when like you were talking about the mutton rolls earlier, and you know, when I'm having the cooks taste it, I'm just like, you want to taste this, and you want it to like whack you in the face, you know. So yeah, really fun. Really fun. The cocktail program also, like, I think we have one of the best bars.
Those guys are definitely on top of their game now.
Yes, they're fantastic.
I had a couple of cocktails that were delicious. We actually, all three of us had different cocktails, and they were all fantastic. So
awesome. Yeah.
Really, really good. Yeah. My Taj Mahal, which I'm a gin drinker, so was really delicious. And
yeah, everyone works very hard across all of our restaurants.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice to see a team of people who are all on the same tune.
Yes.
And they're all, you know, the server was super, super good. Very nice, very helpful.
Awesome.
So great experience overall. And congratulations. And the place looks very cool and it feels very comfortable. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't feel like you're in a brand new, you know, modern
tiny
restaurant,
30-seat place. Yeah, and Joe, Pat, and Rachel, and some of the other people there, we built all of that.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that you touch in there is built by the owners. You know, from the bar top to the banquettes that you sit on. You know, those are from Joe's old church, and you know, everything is done by. By
what?
Us.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Well, the first time I went to Manoline, now I have to correct the way I say it.
I know, everyone says Manoline, and that's fine.
It's Manoline.
It's Monoline, yeah.
Monoline. it was in the early days, and whoever was waiting on us, maybe one of the owners said, because the blue tile work just mm-hmm. catches your eyes. I'm like, who did that? That's
in the bathroom at
Rupee,
too.
Yeah. They said,
we got some left over.
They said, well, we just watched a YouTube video on it. And then
YouTube
we put up
video.
This beautiful
yep.
tile wall.
Funny how that works.
That's very cool. Yeah. Congratulations for being
Thank
so creative.
Thanks for having me.
We're going to jump right from the deliciousness that is Monoline and the Rupee
Old
Bar
Salt.
And Old Salt Bagels to...
what is it with those crumbs?
Cheetos breadcrumbs?
Uh-huh.
OMG. On Cairo Radio, it's the Hot Stove Society Show, 97. 3 FM.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
We hope you're up for a crummy time here at the Hot Stove Society. It's the Hot Stove Society Kitchen here on Cairo Radio. My name's Tom Douglas.
And I'm Thierry Rotiro, the chef in the hat.
Chef in the chapeau.
That's right.
You're looking fine today, Chef.
Hey, so are you. Yeah, look at you
so
in your suit over there.
I'm in my velour sweat outfit.
Classy.
Velour. You need the gold
chain. I was here early to get changed before my 8 o'clock or my 8:10 meeting. I have an 8:10 meeting on Fridays and then till the radio show. And then I got called into duty at the bar at the Dahlia Bakery this morning. We had a no-show server today, so. I went in there, and there were about, how many people were in line at that point? Maybe 15 or 20 years. A lot.
A good sign for business.
And Molly, our manager there, was just looked at me, and I could just see in her eyes. She was like, just
terror.
Looked at me. No, not terror. She was totally in control. She's been there before. She's
yeah.
been there a long time.
Yeah, 2 days ago.
She knows how to pace it. But I said, could you use a hand? And she just said, if you have time, that would be fabulous. Just really simply. You know, just
yeah, when
like
they say that commentate like that, you know you need to step in.
Well, not just step in, but it's so sweet to see somebody who's getting their butt kicked.
Yeah.
Just keep their calm. Just do what you can do, right? And try to make it the best for each guest that we have. It wasn't long after that, Eric showed up to make coffees, and I went to my meeting and all that sort of thing. I'm just trying to waste time here because we're going into a subject that Pamela is very interested in, and... we want to find out why you latched on to this. It just doesn't seem like you. Although I do know a secret passion of yours is Cheetos.
You like Cheetos?
Why did you have to tell them?
You like Cheetos?
This is the woman who believes in a rainbow plate on every meal. Like carrots and broccoli and chard and beets. And
do you make your own Cheetos?
I've mastered Cheese Its, but not Cheetos.
Ah.
As you know, and we were reading in Food 52, the absolute best test, which is a little bit like our Hot Stove Society tasting panel, all the crunchy, crispy coatings that they are talking about these days and things, the items that you actually make the coatings out of. And so they took on saltines, Ritz crackers, fresh breadcrumbs, hallelujah, potato chips.
Glad it made the list.
Potato chips, Cheez-Its. Panko, rice flour, which I don't think enough people recognize how nice and crispy rice flour can be. Cornflake crumbs. And I don't see Doritos in here, but I'm sure Doritos.
It's popular,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, it's very popular. So, Chef, you've heard the list. I'm going to go through it one more time.
No.
Let's just say you're making chicken fingers, chicken tenders, which I know you like to make every Friday. You have your choice of saltine crackers.
I know the recipe. I've just never made it.
Saltine crackers, Ritz crackers, fresh breadcrumbs, potato chips, Cheez-Its. Have you ever had a Cheez-It?
No, I don't. That's okay.
Oh, my God. You're just such a sheltered man.
I am a sheltered
panko,
man.
Panko crumbs, which is basically white bread.
Right.
Right? Rice flour, cornflake crumbs. Where are you headed when you're making chicken strips?
There's only one place I'm headed. It's bread crumbs.
Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Bread crumbs.
Bread crumbs.
Yes.
Why? Well, panko is bread crumbs.
Yeah. I think panko is has its moment, but when I'm going to go deep frying for about 20 minutes on a piece of chicken, I think panko is not resistant enough to be taking that well.
Mm-hmm.
That my take, my experience with panko is it's nice to use it as a crumb.
When you're deep frying.
For fast crumbing, for fast toasting or baking, but not for long term. And I think that when you do fried chicken, it takes a much longer. It needs something that's a little bit sturdier, which is why often people use a lot of flour on the chicken and everything and make this very heavy, crusty kind of surrounding. But I would say breadcrumb would be my go-to,
mm-hmm.
and toasted flour always. And I would definitely love rice flour because I think rice flour is different than regular flour. It's not as heavy. It's not on the palate especially. So rice flour and breadcrumb would be my two out of this whole list here.
Did you say toasted flour?
Yeah.
So just
toasted
hot pan.
In a pan until it's totally golden brown. I learned that from a very big master chef named Tom Douglas. A long time ago.
Very big.
You can actually buy toasted rice flour, but you can't really buy toasted all-purpose
flour. You buy toasted flour?
You can buy toasted rice flour.
You can't toast your own flour?
You can. I'm just saying it's a product
Try
that's
harder.
Available out there.
Man, people are
so you're kind
lazy.
Of skirting the issue a bit. I know we all know, like my favorite dredge, when you get into flour and things like that, you're talking about a dredge and not right. a coating so much.
Correct.
My favorite dredge is one part cornstarch, one part cornmeal, a fine cornmeal, to one part masa harina.
Okay.
Which is the Mexican corn flour, the nixtamalized.
So the
corn.
Masa harina brings the flavor, the
brings
corn
the fragrance.
Brings the texture.
Yeah.
And then the first one is what?
Cornstarch brings the crispiness.
Crispy, yeah.
Yeah. So that's my favorite dredge. But I'm trying to think how I would use the Cheez-Its. The only time I've ever used potato chips
you know
is
how you use it?
My mom made, you know, the tuna casserole with potato chips on top or something like that, right? So, yeah, exactly.
Nice.
But from a crumb perspective, I mean, you literally have to do something like fish and chips or you have to do something like chicken, like a fried chicken. So I'm at a loss.
Yeah, me too. I think cornflake, you know, somebody mentioned cornflake. Is it in here?
Yeah,
cornflake.
Yeah.
You know, on a cake, for example, or on a, you know, something like this, like a dessert, with just toasted, not fried, not, you know, just toasted.
Uh-huh.
I could see that as a crust because that would make a little sense. But the others, I mean, like Cheez-It or whatever, I don't even know, you know, whatever. But crackers, like, why would you want to use that to make a, I mean.
Well, here's the thing about that. Here's what I'll say about that.
Yes.
Which is down at Seatown restaurant, yeah. I take buckets of Pepperidge Farm Goldfish.
Yes, I know.
And I saute them
yes.
in bacon fat, butter, and my one of my spice rubs. Sometimes I use the peri-peri rub. Sometimes I use the crab cake seasoning. So
what you're doing is you're making...
That's not like a crust.
You're
though.
Going from ordinary to extraordinary for the goldfish.
Yes.
That's what you're doing.
Yes, exactly.
But going to a breadcrumb, I mean, to a crumb to make that, no.
Well, I mean, I think the places that are getting away with it are like Taco Bell and, you know, extraordinary restaurants like that.
The test was done all on chicken cutlets.
Chicken cutlets, like as in chicken milanese.
Right. So yeah. They were looking to some of these other breadings to add another, like, spice level.
Uh-huh. And did they come to a conclusion?
Breadcrumbs.
Breadcrumbs?
Hallelujah. Reinvent the wheel. Guess what? You come back at the end. No, it's got to be round.
Well, the most likely in that scenario, if you wanted to use up a cracker that you had, like the saltines would make a really fine breadcrumb. If you crushed them with a rolling pin, there's nothing there to be.
But you better fry fast because it's already baked. It's already crunchy. It's already got all this different texture. So if you're going to fry that, you can't leave that in the fryer for 20 minutes. It would be burned.
You don't need to, yeah.
It would be quick.
These cutlets are, you know, they're a quarter inch thick at the most.
True.
Right? So
you're going to put that on veal cutlet? Holy cow.
Yes, sir. Why not? I mean, people leave breadcrumbs in their home all the time for years in their cupboards, right? You Progresso thing of breadcrumbs, and all of a sudden you have a veal cutlet or a chicken cutlet or a pork cutlet, and you go and you reach, you know, you just spent, what, $10 or $15 a pound on this meat, and then you go reach into a cabinet for herbs that are 5 years old and Progresso breadcrumbs that are probably older.
Are you guys getting this message over there? You get it? Yeah. You listeners are here listening?
So the point is, if you're going to make a dish like that, don't go to your cabinet and use... It's like using stale bread for your turkey stuffing. It makes me crazy.
No, exactly.
You see it in millions of recipes. Well, use stale bread. No, you don't use stale bread. Use fresh bread, right? And toast it, but you don't use stale bread.
I'm with you.
The same way you don't use stale breadcrumbs or anything else. Blah, 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 blah.
I must say that it is definitely, you know, like a piece of fish with a little crumb on top is really delicious. But I would never use anything but breadcrumb for that.
Yeah. So one of our listeners wants to email us with how you use one of these tragic tragic items to
the
make.
The comment section was enormous.
Was it? So, yeah. I know it's just me. I'm just being it's a cynical old chef. But if you want to tell us your favorite way to use saltines, Ritz crackers, potato chips, Cheez-Its, panko, or cornflake crumbs on a dish, I would like to know.
Okay.
I want to be enlightened. Chef, is that cool?
That is very cool. All right. The problem is we're going to have to do testing after that to make sure they're right.
That's fine. Let's do it. When we come back, it's time for Food for Thought. Tasty trivia. I know we haven't had quite enough for breakfast here this morning. Old salt bagels. Food for Thought, Tasty Trivia, right here on the Hot Stove Society show. Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Here we go. It's time for Food for Thought Tasty Trivia, brought to you by Rubber Glove Spice Blends, a family that has grown to now 19 different flavor profiles. We develop each one to complement a specific dish, but they're also able to be versatile and kind of move across genres. We make sauces, as in our ancho molasses barbecue sauce, and of course, our delicious toasted shallot mustard. Really tasty, gotta say. You can purchase these Rubber Glove spices and see Seattle area markets, including Town and Country, Metropolitan Markets, Bartels just bought a bunch of our rubs to sell in their stores, Whole Foods. And then, of course, we're across the country in the Good Food Store in Missoula, Montana.
Shout-out.
Or Sunny Farms Country Store in Squim. Or, of course, you can go to TomDouglas.com. And, you know, a lot of stores carry our rubs, but they don't carry all of our product, right?
Right.
So down at the market at Seatown Rub Shack, we carry everything, and online.
What a great way.
You can find everything online.
Come to Pike Place Market, do your shopping, and finish at the Rub Shack.
All right. Pamela, will you tell folks how to play our game, who's going to win the prize, and who is this imposter that is pretending to be a chef at our microphone over there?
Each of the three contestants is going to get five questions, and we have convinced Dennis, one of our audience members, to be one of the contestants today.
Look at those broad shoulders, Dennis.
He's a chef in a bow tie. I like it. Chef with style.
He's best dressed. And he's going to win, and he's going to be able to pick out three rubs to take with him as a prize of his choice.
And the loser will deliver.
The loser will hand deliver.
Cool.
Let's start with you, Terry Rotaro.
Go right ahead.
Question number one. How do you prepare fresh abalone, the gastropod mollusk?
You take it out of the shell, or you can leave. You take the muscle off the mollusk. You keep it in the shell. You make a nice little compound butter with fresh herbs and everything. Put all this on top of the mollusk. Put it in the oven. Bake it fast, not too long. And not too hot, and then let all that butter melt, and then serve it.
Mmm, that sounds delicious. The food companion was looking for a pounding stage.
Oh, yeah. You could do that, too. Depends on the... Okay, so hold on. Hold on. Depends on the size
Next.
Of...
Yeah,
hold on. Wrong. Depends on the size of your mollusk. The last time I had a bologna, they were this big.
Last time you had bologna what?
A bologna.
Number two. True or false? Asparagus is a member of the lily family.
True.
Yes. The flavor of butterscotch is a combination of what ingredients?
Butter and scotch. Yes.
Right.
Butter and what would the sweetener be?
Brown sugar.
Yeah. What is the French name for coffee with milk?
Je ne sais pas. I'm just kidding.
I don't know.
Café au lait.
Yeah. Excellent. Mark Twain said, cauliflower is nothing but a cabbage with a college education. This elegant member of the cabbage family is composed of stalks and florets. What are the florets called?
Florets is not the name for it? What are the florets called? You do know the answer? I can't believe this is not florets. That's always what I call them all my life.
We think of it more in terms of cheese. It starts with a C.
Cheddar? Curd?
Curd.
Oh, the curd of the cauliflower?
Yeah, that's what the florets are called.
Have you heard that?
Absolutely. Can't believe you didn't know that,
Chef. In translation of Tom's language, that means no. Okay, 3 out of 5.
Okay, Dennis, what country developed the unleavened bread chapati to scoop and push their food around? Often, a lot of times, it's pushing lentils around. Very big country.
Most populous country on earth, isn't it?
Turkey.
Close.
Close.
India.
Duckland.
That's funny. I was going to say that. India.
Very close.
I was going to say that first.
Is that Turkey or is that India?
Yeah.
if you hear it's Turkey, if you hear it's
India. I was going to say,
Number two, what is the traditional shape or cut of the meats and cheeses in a chef's salad?
It's like ice. No, it's not like ice. Like French fry.
Chef salad?
Chef salad.
How do they cut the meat and cheeses?
It's something like this.
cubes.
No, something like this.
In cubes.
Close. That's the non-classy places. The classy places, julienned.
Julienned.
Number three.
Tell me.
What is chorizo?
It is a sausage, a Mexican sausage.
Yay!
A Mexican ground sausage.
Number four, what are two methods for making croutons?
You can deep fry them, you can fry them, you can make them.
Yep. Yay!
Et two.
Right, one more.
What kind of bread is used in Eggs Benedict?
Traditional, would that be a English muffin?
Yes!
Yes!
Wow.
Finish strong.
3 out of 5.
What does Lola use English muffins?
We make our own, yes, you betcha.
Delicious.
Mr. Douglas, what is fatback?
It leads from my front to my rear. Fatback is fat from pork.
Can you tell us how it differs from salt pork, though?
Well, salt pork is the belly and fatback is the back.
Yes, and it's fresh and unsalted and unsmoked as the defining characteristic.
Okay.
Should we give him that one?
No. Yeah.
No.
Wow, that's tough.
What is
the fat from the pork or not?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, I think you get it.
Number two, what is the name of the decorative technique of pressing a pattern into a pie crust?
Crimping. Are you talking about like the edge?
Mm-hmm.
You crimp the edge?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, crimping.
No. To flute.
Yes,
it's to flute.
It's tough around here.
Wow.
It's tough.
Generally, what does the term giblets refer to?
It's that package you get when you buy it.
Generally, it's the innards of the fowl.
Okay, what? What
the heart, the liver,
yes.
The gizzard.
Correct.
The neck.
You know, thank you. Yeah. What is gravlax?
Gravlax is a cured fish, not smoked.
Raw.
You can have smoked gravlax, but it's just the raw cured fish.
And can you give us what the ingredients are in the cure for a bonus point?
Typically, dill is the big one, and
yep.
It comes from the Norwegian countries.
Salt, sugar, and a dill mix.
Yeah.
Yeah, just what you said. Number five.
She's tough over there.
What is the name of the fermented, pungent Korean vegetable condiment?
Oh.
Oh, it's a gimme.
You got the easy ones.
Oh, kimchi.
Yes. Tom wins 4 points out of 5.
Well, that was certainly exciting. Thank you, Dennis, for participating.
Thank you, Dennis.
And for winning. You get to go pick out three rubs from our gift shop over here to your
And I'll deliver
front
them
there.
To you.
If you want to be part of the show, you can join the community on your YouTube channel at Tom Douglas and Company /forward/ everything else. And look for the Hot Stove Society radio show or buy tickets to attend our tapings here in person at hotstovesociety.com. We'll serve you breakfast. You're listening to us on Cairo. The show is produced by Pamela Hinckley, Sean McFadden, and our editor is Sean Don't Call Me Del Torre. And remember, if you miss any episode, Chef, I mean any episode, of our Hot Stove Society show on 97.3, you can listen via podcast. Just subscribe with your favorite podcast app.
Happy Ramadan and have a wonderful weekend.